About 11 clergy people on their way to lunch one day. It was first captured in a book called Know Your Story and Lead With It by Richard Hester and Kelly Walker Jones, and I have asked some people to help me tell it today. So, Kate's going to get us started. She's playing Alice. Alice says,
"It was a beautiful sunny day. Peking Garden was less than a mile away, and there were sidewalks the whole way, so we decided to walk, the 11 of us. I don't really remember what happened. One minute I was walking and laughing, and the next minute I was lying on the ground, looking up at Ed's face. I couldn't really tell you what happened, but as I told everyone at lunch later, I am totally fine."
Kelly says,
"I was talking to Will when all of a sudden I was startled by a loud sound. I turned around and Kathy was banging on the hood of a car. I could see Alice on the ground. I didn't know what happened or why, but I jumped into action. I started directing traffic around her."
And Susan has this to say.
"I was late to work with my babies in the back seat. I needed to drop them off at daycare, and they were both crying. And I felt like crying, too, because I was so tired. The light was yellow, so I was stopping. And I turned around to soothe them, and I swear I didn't see anyone in the intersection."
Where's Ed?
"You know, I saw the whole thing from behind. A slow-moving car knocked Alice down as she was crossing the street. I yelled out at the driver, 'Stop! Open your eyes!' I was angry she was driving so poorly, but I needed to make sure Alice was okay, so I ran up to her and knelt down to check. She was fine, just shook up and in a bit of a daze."
Richard says,
"I heard the commotion and instantly froze. As I watched everyone leap into action, I realized after a few seconds that someone should be calling 911. I pulled out my phone, and I did."
And Will?
"There was nothing I could do. I felt so helpless. As I watched the scene unfold, I saw one of my congregants drive by. After a few minutes, I offered to step in for Kelly to direct traffic until the police arrived."
And Jill?
"Within a few moments, I realized that Alice was fine, so I turned to the driver of the car, who seemed worse off than anyone. She was upset, and I talked with her, comforting her for a long time."
So far, we have a story about confusion, action, guilt, anger, paralysis, and comfort. Plus, we have the story of whatever it is going on in your head as you are listening to this story. So multiply that by every person in this room and you see how complicated stories can get, right? That's the thing about stories. It's never simple. It's always multifaceted. Rarely can a story be just one objective, factual account of events because most experiences involve multiple perspectives. And in this particular story, at least 12. And as we've seen, nobody experienced the event the same way. Therefore, no one person could have possibly told that whole story, for each person only had one small piece of it. As the Native American saying goes, it takes 1,000 voices to tell a single story. Telling stories is important. Stories make up who we are and how we understand the world. I really don't think there's any way that I can overstate the importance of story in our lives and in our history. Stories build character, communities, nations, and religions. The story of a man named Jesus changed the course of history. The story of my childhood love of church changed my life. Stories shape who we are. Stories hold societies together, yet stories are not neutral. They simultaneously reflect and are limited by our own expectations, perspectives, and choices. We select, reject, connect, pair, smooth out, lengthen this, compress that, and tidy up a messy conglomeration of information to create a story of what happened. With this car accident or with anything else in our lives, say Hester and Walker Jones. And most of the important information about the event lies about us on the cutting room floor. We walk off with our story, leave the remains on the floor, and go on our way. We seldom notice that we've left so much behind. This is the way it is with a lot of life experiences, especially when it comes to those traumatic experiences or those experiences that are otherwise very important in our lives. We walk away from the scene with a limited, particular perspective, and very quickly, a narrative starts to form around our limited information that we have. And after a while, the story takes on a life of its own, and it starts to play like a tape in your head over and over again, convincing us that this version of what happened is true. This narrative is true. So imagine if the characters in the story we just heard about the car accident had gotten stuck with the tapes that were playing in their head, whatever their particular narrative was. Alice would have remained confused and vulnerable. Kelly kept busy but not knowing all the information. Susan would have let guilt grow inside of her. Ed would stay angry. Richard remained frozen and Will become more and more helpless, while Jill stayed stuck in the role of comforter forever. Eventually, these characters, had they gotten stuck in that loop, might start to believe they actually are what they felt or experienced, or what their narrative says about them. Which is why we need community. Why we need other people. We need help fleshing out our stories and gaining perspective on what happened to us in the world, to what happened to all of us. Now, after the accident, the 11 clergy members that we just heard from, well, we heard from six of them, so there was half a dozen more perspectives, but they all did eventually make it to lunch, and they gathered around a big table, and they recalled that, as Hester and Walker Jones said, that in this situation, we had a chance to hear 10 other people's accounts and to see that they had gathered pieces of information we hadn't noticed and had created a film somewhat different than ours. In other words, they had a chance to return to the cutting room floor and gather up new information and incorporate other perspectives into their narratives. So when we put all those perspectives together, when we flesh out the story and thicken it, the story becomes one of cooperation, resilience, and strength. How all these people came together to make a bad situation a little bit better. They shared in community a deeper truth. And as they did so, something started to emerge within them about how they had survived and about how they were a more tightly knit group of colleagues. This example, of course, illustrates the power of friendship, collegiality, and community. When we open up within circles of trust and respect, our stories have the opportunity to deepen and expand and transform. And this is one of the reasons why I love being a part of this church. For here is at least one place where we can go to share our stories, thicken them, incorporate new insights, and rewrite more liberating narratives than the ones we may be prone to come up with ourselves. So whatever tape is playing in our heads about who we are, what we've failed at, what we've fallen short on, how we're not good enough, undertakes the acid test of love here at church. And chances are, when you open up with your whole vulnerable self, a new perspective, a fresh insight, or perhaps even the wild voice of the one whom some call God will sound within you and clear the way for you to access a deeper truth about who you are, one which centers your belovedness and your worthiness. In their work with story and the power of narrative, the authors of the book that I've been talking about engaged something they called relentless optimism. Relentless optimism, they said, is a term we've borrowed from narrative therapy to express our theological view that God is constantly at work in our personal and collective stories to realize God's dream for us. Although we may not pay attention to this ongoing work, it's there nonetheless, God's persistent, compassionate presence. God is always at work to offer an alternative narrative. So as you know, our theme this month is resilience. And I know how common it is for folks to think that resilience is a personal responsibility, one which requires individual strength and grit, as if we can each just tap into our own selves and come up with enough grit to survive. But I wanted to suggest today that there is another truth about resilience. There is an alternative story, an alternative perspective, and that is you are not alone. You don't have to do everything alone. For as a people, we are wired to come together and share our stories and be part of something larger than the self. We are wired for real, honest community. Just look around. Every single person in this room has a lifetime of stories they could tell, and they chose to come here today to be in this community. Some are stories of triumph and joy. Some are stories of grief and regret. But whatever the case may be, there is grit and resilience and love on display everywhere, and it begs to be shared. So perhaps we're here today specifically because there is a deeper place that our stories want to go. Because when voiced in community, when spoken into the heart of the holy, this becomes possible. People tell me all the time that they come to church because they want community. And we get that here. When you come to People's Church, you can trust that you will consistently receive a warm welcome, a hot cup of coffee, more than a few smiles, and hopefully a word of inspiration. But may I suggest that a warm welcome is merely what you will find on the surface. So don't stop there. Dig in. Engage. Speak, listen, get involved. Imagine what could happen if we listened more deeply and shared more willingly. Imagine what could happen if we went beyond the superficial community and into the real vulnerable community of shared story that is not only possible, but life-changing. I used to think that I wasn't smart enough to be a minister. For years, I resisted the idea, telling myself that there's no way I could do it because I just wasn't intellectual enough. Occasionally, I let that tape still play in my head. It gets me all worked up and convinced that I'm a fraud because I don't have a PhD and I never published a book. But when that tape starts playing, I turn to you all, I turn to the other people in my life who see me, and I let them help me tell a different version of my own story. I listen to other perspectives that remind me of strengths that sometimes I can't see, a deeper truth that I am enough just the way I am, even if I don't have a PhD. I turn to God with relentless optimism to live into an alternative, always brand new version of the story about who I am, my worth, and where I'm going. That's my invitation to you all today. I want to see if we can all return to the cutting room floor. Find the pieces of your story that you left behind or ignored, and see if you can incorporate them into a more profound truth about who you are. Turn to your loved ones, community, people around you here at church, friends and community elsewhere. Tell your story and listen with an open mind to the parts you haven't noticed or haven't seen or heard yet. Search for the deeper truth, the richer, fuller version of events. Trust that if the story you are living, the tapes that are playing in your head, are somehow unsatisfactory, embarrassing, shallow, full of regret or uncertainty, trust that that's not the whole story. There is an alternative narrative at work within you, beckoning you to lean into it, expand what you think is true, and be transformed by love. So, let's see if we can do that in our coffee hour after church today, if we can, in our conversations, share deeply with one another, listen deeply, and offer that alternative truth that each one of us is beloved and worthy. May this be so. Amen, and blessed be.